F4.
Number 17A.
We are starting today with the third part. That means that third point in the candlestick order, which is symbolized by love and mind. The third part is the biggest body of the whole gospel. It takes the most chapters. And so we can see that here we touch now really the core of the gospel. It's Christianity, it's science, as Christianity, as you know, in the candlestick. And John was talking in the age of Christianity, introducing Christianity. And so we can see that, therefore, we must get here a wonderful sense of what the new concept of Christianity is. It isn't so much science as that is the time of Mrs. Eddy, but in the gospel you have a wonderful sense of Christianity. The text here is rather easy to be understood with human thinking. It's not a difficult text, but what we want to bring out is not the human text, but the atmosphere that goes right through it, the inner attitude of John, who was beginning to see that Jesus had quite a different attitude compared with the Old Testament. And so we have here really the new paradigm brought out wonderfully clear. And therefore, my endeavor will be, and I say endeavor, I don't know if I will achieve it or not, but we all can try and we all can do our best to try to touch at least the hem of that wonderful consciousness that this third part is bringing out. It is love and mind. And we can see this is a great concept, because love is always the heart of Christian Science, so to say, the pinnacle of Christian Science. Love is always that which today in the whole world of the thinkers, no matter in which discipline they are forward thinkers, they all somehow begin to speak that the aim of our age would be, on the aim of all the sciences should be love. That's something very new. I mean, you couldn't say that in my university time. If in a discussion or in a seminar at the university at my time, I would have said, well, the purpose of the whole discipline we are studying is actually love, I think they would have kicked me out of the university. Today, this is something you read from the most forward thinkers. They begin to see that those we have a material look at the universe, or a biological look at the universe, or a chemical look at the universe, or any look at the universe. They begin to see that that universe is evolving, and is evolving that makes sense. At my university time, a science didn't have to make sense, didn't have to have meaning for human beings. That was out, that was considered to be humanly subjective, and subjectivity has nothing to do in the old orthodox sense of what is called science. So we are at the brink of the 7,000 year period, in the period towards love, and we have to be aware that in the world something is resounding. What we consider here as a universe that has the great purpose and the great meaning that all the sciences should make sense for humankind, for men, that it should not hurt men, but that it should really bless men, and that only that science is really a science that achieves that aim. This is completely new. And we know that in all the various disciplines, this movement is at work. And so we can be, so to say, the pioneers of the new age that is coming. I don't mean the new ages, but the new age of the 7,000-year period. And I think we will make a terrific impact with our consciousness if for the next 2 or 3 days we keep that attitude awake, or at least we begin to touch that attitude and begin to see which attitude we should culture within ourselves, so that when we go home we know somehow what is this attitude, and so try to culture it and love it and see the bigness of it and the loveliness of it, the promise of it that is embedded in it. So this is a great subject, and I only hope that I'm able somehow to find the terms and the renderings in English to convey really this atmosphere of love and mind. We have as an epitome for the whole of the third part, which is science as Christianity, we have in the science as Christianity the plan of love. So you have love there, operates in the realm of the ideas of mind. You can see it's a very simple statement. It is not a statement that cannot be understood. It's so simple, but you see in it first that it is love and mind. Love has a saving plan, a plan of love that is always fulfilled and perfect, and that it operates, that plan operates. That's why it is science as Christianity. It's science because science is self-operative. The science of God is self-operative. The sciences in the other disciplines are not self-operative. But because it is science with a capital S, we know that it is the divine principle behind it. The middle stick of the candlestick is always principle operating as the Word, as the Christ, as Christianity, and as science. So we culture a consciousness within ourselves where we see the divine principle, the middle stick, is always self-operative. What is it self-operative here in Christianity? It's self-operative as a plan of love. Not only as a plan, it's a plan of love, because we can see that right through evolution, right from the point of the Big Bang on, before man was on earth, there was a big plan at work, and that plan at work was always towards a final state of fulfillment. It was always a constant trend to refinement, nearer to away from matter, away from dead matter, to living matter, away from living matter, to consciousness, and man became conscious, and consciousness appeared, and that consciousness evolves and evolves constantly in one great direction towards fulfillment of love. You see that also in Teilhard de Chardin's whole concept of cosmology, that he could see that behind the whole evolution of the world was just one power at work, one principle at work, namely that everything evolves towards the point what he called Omega, because that's the end of the Greek alphabet, Alpha and Omega, to the end, which Mrs. Eddy would call love. We'll find that that this consciousness is a consciousness that is in being, because that evolution has taken place before man appeared on earth. There was a terrific evolution taking place, an upward revolution taking place before man appeared. So the evolution is not something that man's consciousness brings about, but it is in being. We are considering now that Logos that was before the beginning, that was before creation, that is just there as being, just as we can't say 2 and 2 equal 4 have had a starting point or have been created by man, that these are just facts in being. And so when we are considering love and mind, we must in the first place see that love has nothing to do with man's consciousness, that in the first place it has to do with the one infinite being. The one infinite being is love. And that naturally can translate itself right down to human beings, to mankind. But the origin of love is not in our human consciousness, where we begin to, or where we feel we should love each other, and that we should, that I as a person should have love towards you as a person, and the other person love towards all the other persons. So that's a very translated sense of that which exists in being. And this is what I want to bring out, really. What is that love that is innate in being and not innate in us? We only reflect it. So we don't start with the reflection of love, but we start with love itself, if we want to think scientifically. So in science, as Christianity, we consider love as God, love as beingness, if we want to get rid of the term the God, as in being. And that being is always conscious of itself. It is always mind. That love thinks, so to say, thinks in quotation mark, is conscious of itself always only as mind, capital M. And this is a consciousness that we can reflect, and that John tries to show us how it reflects itself, so that we have the same consciousness as the consciousness of God as love and mind. And so he tries to show what is the attitude when we begin to reflect that attitude. So first of all, I stated the standpoint we will have to do with the plan of love, that is, with the saving plan of love, which is only contemplating what mind knows, not what our brain knows. So if love is only aware of itself as the divine mind, we can perhaps ask ourselves, what is that awareness? And I want to talk about it for quite a while, and it seems that when I talk about it, that I'm talking about it constantly in a repetitive way, that I use practically always the same renderings over and over, just as dear old John did it. He did that too. But I want to do it because I feel the more I bring out these two terms, love and mind, the more perhaps we get the feel of it, the atmosphere of it, and not just the terms. And actually we have to think that we bring this out not because it is the subject of today and tomorrow, and then we go back to our old business, our old way of life. Actually it should be something that we take home, so to say, as a completely new attitude towards the world at all, towards mankind, towards ourselves, towards the future, towards everything, because it is the infinite divine plan that we are considering, and that divine plan is of the nature of love, which is perfection, which is fulfillment, and that we keep that in the divine mind and not in our human mind. So let us constantly see what love is and what mind is. And I hope you don't get bored when I go over it and over it, but it would be so terrific, I would say, if that new consciousness would crystallize within our consciousness, and we would begin to see our whole life and the future of our life and the world as it is today in that new light, in that completely new light, then constantly to think with our mind, with our human mind and try to find out what is the plan of love in it, what is really happening in the world, how can we interpret that world, what is the good and what is the evil in that world, how can we correct it, and so on. This all should somehow give way to consciousness that is love as mind. So we see love as that which is in being. Well, I have already touched upon it at one time this week, that that synonymous term must be clearly understood. And it is not so easy to understand it, because we always try to go out from our sense of love. Because in every man is a sense that he should be loving, that he should love the neighbor. That is innate in the Jewish law, it's innate in the Christian law, so that it is near to us. And that's the difficulty, that we go out from that feeling sense of love, from that sentiment of love. And therefore, when we talk about love and mind, we just think that is a bigger sense of our human sense of love, and that would be wrong. So love has nothing to do with people. Love is God. So love has nothing to do with a God who loves, and has nothing to do with a man who is loved by God. That would taking in God as a person and man as a person, a relationship from God as a person to man as a person. Love has nothing to do with a creator nor a creation. Love is a fact in being. And that's a difficult thing to get hold of. It's a fact in being. If it wouldn't be a fact in being, then love would not be a positive sense. Even if it's translated to the human, it would not be positive, it would not be helpful, it would not be saving. So we must see that it is a fact in being. What is that fact in being? And when one studies the synonymous term love in the textbook, which we have done, because we have studied the synonyms and have tried to find out what are the ideas that characterize love, so that we have a round sense of a tonal sense of love, we have found many wonderful ideas, that love is welcoming the idea, that love is accepts the idea, that love protects the idea, that love is enclosing the idea, embracing the idea, that love has a plan, that love is fulfillment, perfection, consummation. We all had a whole sense of what love is when we try to find it expressed in ideas. So here, this is not the main point. It is not the main point to see all these various ideas that are attributed to love. Here we have to see really only one thing, namely the much bigger thing, naturally, that love is a fact in being and is meaning what. So in the study of the seven synonymous terms in the textbook, we find very few indications of what love just is as itself. And that is that terrific sense that love is never without its manifestation. This is love. So can you see? It has nothing to do with God loving something. It has nothing to do with we loving each other. It is telling us a fact and says to us, look here, you have a completely wrong concept about the whole universe and about God, because you feel that there is a God and that God exists, but you have a feeling that that God is not always everywhere at every time under every circumstances expressed. You feel that God is something that loves us, that has to love a situation, that has to come to a situation to save it. It's always separate. It's always with God and not God itself. So we have to culture ourselves into that consciousness where we really feel what Mrs. Eddy says, perhaps as the highest sense of love, that divine love cannot be deprived of its object or manifestation. It is a... Sorry, not that I repeat myself. It is just immense to think heavy that attitude where we constantly feel as we go along the day from morning to night, heavy that feeling that divine love, that fulfilled sense of the universe is never without its manifestation. Do we have that feeling? Or do we have that feeling that there is a God who is love and that love is wonderful? But, then comes the but in our consciousness, but I wish that would be manifested, that it would be manifested in my life, that it would be manifested in my body, that it would be manifested in my business, that it would be manifested in my family, that it would be manifested in the world, in my nation, in the whole world. Don't we have a sense that we say, yes, God is love. That's wonderful. You know, God doesn't hate. And there is no fear in love. But do we have a sense that it is always, at every moment, in every situation, expressed? Do we have that sense? And I, for myself, I must say, perhaps I speak also for you, that I don't have that. But I know that I should have that, that only when I touch that consciousness that I'm really living and moving in love, in God. Only then. So that I have to get rid of these traditional 1,000-year-old beliefs that just nag within one's consciousness and within one's mind and heart that says, yes, God is love. He's such a good, jolly fellow, you know. He doesn't want to hurt you. He only wants to give you the best of the best. But I don't have it. But I don't have it. That's not love. That is perhaps a better sense of the human aspect of love. That instead of hating and so on, one has a sense, well, I still can go back to God Almighty and ask Him to help me, and He will be a help. He will be a help. He will go. He is going to help me. Can you see? Always a distance. We don't see that it is expressed here and now and every time, right away, that love is never separated from its manifestation. Yes? This is love, capital L. It's so big and so simple. Or she would express it in other terms, but the same attitude, that she would say, love is wedded to its own spiritual idea. So in that wedded lies really the accent. Do we have inwardly a feeling that love is wedded constantly, always, to the spiritual idea? Man as spiritual idea. Do we have that feeling? I, for myself, I don't have it always. I long to have it always. And I tried always to remind myself to this simple rule and simple statement to see, I have to sit on the throne of love and to look out into the universe and see that I'm the king of a kingdom, therefore the kingdom is my kingdom. I'm ever present in the kingdom. The king is ever present in the kingdom. Every law, everything that happens in that kingdom is kingish. And so in that same way, we should sit on the throne of grace or the throne of love and see that consciousness is always expressed in every detail, now in every idea, that is always wedded to its spiritual idea's mind. So we get here that wonderful tone of love and mind, that love knows nothing except its own consciousness, mind. So little by little we get nearer to it. Or that tone of love, perhaps Mrs. Eddy would bring out by saying that divine love, that love's halo rests on its object. You see, it rests on its object. Love's halo is not something that we can call down and say, "Dear God Almighty, be kind to me, give me what I need." And you can give it to me. I know you are love. I know you want to give it. Please give it. It's separation. The halo rests not on its object. It's somewhere between God and me, floating around somewhere. And if I have a good luck, then it rests on me. It comes down on my head and I have a halo. Yeah. isn't it so that we don't have constantly that wonderful sense of love, halo rests on every object, on everything. It rests on every nation, it rests on every family, it rests on every business, it rests on my body, it rests on everything that is always, that love is always on its object. It's so that the divine subject is never separated from the divine object, that there is one, that it is a one and the same thing, and is always expressed. Or another rendering she has is that we have taken very lightly, I think, we have read it so often, without perhaps thinking what it means for our consciousness, that Mrs. Eddy states, love never loses sight of loveliness. Love never loses sight of loveliness. That's love by itself. Now, do we reflect that? Is it so that we can say of ourselves that we never lose sight of loveliness? Do we actually in our consciousness always see everything in the light of love as loveliness? Or do we see in our consciousness people, good people, bad people, good situation, bad situation? Isn't it so? And then when we have this duality, then we start and say, gosh, we have to resolve that. But we first make the mistake of having a false starting point. And there should we begin with our consciousness. Not to repair something that has gone wrong, but to construct, to build really first a good real model, so that it is absolutely perfect and doesn't need to be repaired constantly. And that would be that love never loses sight of loveliness. If love is love, then it can't be something else, the very opposite. Therefore, it must reflect itself in loveliness.